Justice Miller-Lerman is recused from this matter. And Justice Papik is rejoining the court and second here to.
Mr. Chief Justice, I'm recused on the remainder of the call, so I am leaving the session.
Yes, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Justice Miller-Lerman. Counsel, you may be seated for a second here. Is it Mr. Mattson?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
You are counsel for the appellee and you are participating obviously by WebEx this morning. Is anyone else, any other counsel for appellee arguing today?
No, Your Honor. It's just me.
Very good. Thank you. And Mr. McClay, are you covering the entire argument for appellants today?
No, Mr. Scott will cover the team.
Very good. So you're going to share
2 minutes.
2 minutes?
I will take 2 minutes in my body.
And how much time does that leave you?
That leaves me 6 minutes.
6 minutes. Very good. You may approach and may proceed. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. My name is Bart McClay. I represent the appellant Lee Simmons. There's a single issue for this court today as it relates to Mr. Simmons, and that's whether he was had a constitutional right to a jury trial under the circumstances of this case. Let me just frame the facts just very briefly. This involved a magnificent piece of property, 560 acres, known as Canyon Rim, off the Niobrara National Scenic River. Mr. Schmidt was enamored with it. He said there would be profit to be made to develop and sell the property there, and joined with Mr. Simmons in that effort. He contributed $600,000, but he failed to document it. And that led to some problems because he started the lawsuit and he filed a lawsuit saying his $600,000 was security interest in an unrelated piece of property. Then he said his $600,000 made him an owner in a company called Mar 14, which Mr. Scott will address. Then he said that the $600,000 made him an owner in a company called VWPP. So there was competing views. And ultimately, the district court here, though, in my view, got it right. The district court ultimately said this case was about an agreement to partner involving the 560 acres of property. The district court said, and I quote, that Simmons and Schmidt contemplated acquisition of the 560 to subdivide, develop, and to sell the property. That's what it was about. We pled a breach of contract claim, into the case a little while, partly because we were unraveling the facts here as to what happened and who owned what. But once we got there, the breach of contract claim is very similar to what the district court identified. But the district court did not believe we were entitled to a jury trial on that, even though we made the request 2 years before the case was brought to trial. Let me turn to the law.
There's some question about whether or not you waived that. Is it?
Your Honor, the district court actually didn't say waiver, but I do believe that waiver comes into the question here. The district court relied upon what's known as the equitable cleanup doctrine, saying that once a case starts in equity, it gets to continue in equity. And that was the position taken, and cited, I believe, Kuhlman versus Cargill for that. But in this particular case, ultimately, the district court found that this involved the recovery of specific property and income associated with that. And we had pointed out to the district court that actually there's a statute involved, 25-1104, when there's issues of fact arising in an action for recovery of specific real property, that is a jury trial unless there is waiver. So back to Mr. Chief Justice, your question about waiver. That then invokes the question of Jacobson and the more recent decision in McGill Renovation about whether there was a waiver of a jury trial. Jacobson has said that that involves three circumstances, none of which occurred here, and even if they did occur here, this was a very clearly a proper case where a withdrawal of the waiver would have been, should have been allowed.
But Jacobson wasn't an equitable cleanup doctrine case, was it? It was a tort case.
It was a tort case. There was Justice Stacy, there was, as you know, a bench trial issue in that case, and there was a jury trial issue. So it likened the two cases in that regard. But really, you're exactly right. The question is whether or not, under the law of Nebraska, whether or not once a common law breach of contract estoppel claim, which is what we brought here, which would entitle an individual to a jury trial under the Constitution, whether once that happens, is there a waiver of that right by three specific conditions? And our position is those that did not occur here. And so, and if it somehow did occur, 2 years before this case came to trial, even the appellee recognized on page 12 of their brief that our demand was in effect a withdrawal of the waiver of the jury trial. That's the way they characterized it. And this court has cited in its decisions, I believe it's the McKinney versus County of Cass case, where this court had said, in that situation, a withdrawal of waiver can be appropriate, is appropriate under certain circumstances, as long as there's no prejudice. And there really couldn't have been here. Mr. Schmidt wasn't even deposed in the case at the time that we did the demand. And you can see that for yourself if you look at Exhibit 161 and look at the date of our application. So this was a case where there was no waiver of jury trial. There wasn't anything done in open court on it. There had been a telephone session that had taken place early in the case before this claim arose, before we had figured out the case. But I would suggest, Your Honor, Jacobson had the same thing. Jacobson had a telephone conference. The plaintiff was deemed to have consented to a non-jury case, a non-jury trial there, and ultimately objected, just like we objected, and then ultimately came to trial and made another objection at the time of trial, which we did as well. So we really followed along in a way of Jacobson.
In what way is the equitable cleanup doctrine an application of a waiver principle?
Well, it's been referred to sometimes as a waiver principle because it is implying that you are waived, that there's a jury trial being waived by the parties in the case. That the in my view, this is a remnant from code pleading versus notice pleading. When you had code pleading and notice pleading, we would file separate actions. You'd have multiple actions because somebody would file a claim in equity, then they'd file another claim in at law. Today, when you have notice pleading and those actions are together. So to answer your question, Justice Papik, the reason it would be referred to as waiver is somebody would file an equitable action, and then someone else, the other party, would participate, and they would be deemed to have waived their rights because they participated in the equitable action. And so that's why it would be, there was a waiver component to it. But in essence here, in my mind, the equitable cleanup doctrine does not apply at all because of the nature of the claim being made. And if you think about it, in this particular case, the district judge Kozacek here decided that the breach of the claim that he was ruling on was a 560-acre commercial transaction issue involving the recovery of property, involving income on that property. And ultimately, Mr. Simmons' claim for breach of contract was the same. He was talking about the 560 acres of property. Both parties had contributed to an effort or were supposed to. He claims there was a breach, and he claims that he was denied income that he should have received from that. So there was a mirror image on both sides. And so even if somehow the equitable cleanup doctrine applied, our position is the main object here was the subject that both the district court judge found on and the issue that we addressed in our breach of contract claim. So I would say that in either case, we believe it would have been appropriate. And this is, we're talking about a constitutional right. And I guess the last thing I might suggest to the court to consider is look at the Dairy Queen and Beacon Theaters case in the United States Supreme Court. This court has followed along very well the Supreme Court decisions on jury trials generally. And in those cases, it's very, very clear. If a party raises an issue of fact that is should be heard or could be heard by a jury, the United States Supreme Court says that's a jury tribal issue, and no equitable claim that comes into the case can bar that from occurring. And I think it would be appropriate, if the court has not done so yet, to consider that. There is multiple courts that have done that and looked at that. So unless there's a specific question, I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Scott. I believe you're taking rebuttal time here, but good morning to you again.
Thank you again. May it please the court. My name is Eric Scott again, representing Bar 14. And because of the time, I will attempt to be brief. The single issue in this case is whether the district court in this case should have ruled on Schmidt's status and ordered disassociation. You'll note from the record that the district court had made all of the findings to support disassociation in this matter, including the fact that Schmidt was not an economic member of MAR 14, and that Mr. McClay's client, Mr. Simmons, was the sole economic member. You'll see from the record that Schmidt's own testimony, he states that MAR 14 is hopelessly deadlocked. As Schmidt characterized it, Schmidt and Simmons cannot agree regarding how to conduct the business and operations of MAR 14. All facts exist to allow dissolution, or as the parties have asked for, or at least Simmons has asked for, disassociation under 21-147B. Now, the district court did state that the disassociation was not pleaded and so would not be granted. I would note that MAR 14 and Schmidt himself requested relief alternatively, with MAR 14 at the end of the trial expressly asking for disassociation of Schmidt. Finally, with the state of the record and the findings of the district judge, if disassociation is not granted, then there would essentially be another trial on that very issue. There's no questions. Thank you. And I'll yield my time to Mr. McClay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mattson, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning. I wish I was there with you, but I was exposed to someone with COVID, so I'm trying to respect the court's order and am here visually, so or electronically.
Thank you for doing that.
Yes, may it please the court. I'm John Mattson. I represent the appellee, Lanny Schmidt. Lanny Schmidt asked the court to affirm the district court for the following reasons. First, Mr. Simmons waived a jury trial. Under Nebraska Revised Statute 25-1126, sub 3, a jury trial may be validly waived by oral consent in open court entered upon the record. Mr. Simmons waived a jury trial at a scheduling conference held on February 16th of 2017, which was confirmed by subsequent court order dated February 27th of 2017. And that's in the record at transcript 67 and 68.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Was that a waiver of jury trial, or was that an acknowledgement that at that point in time, at that early point in time, there were only matters of equity, there were only equitable claims alleged, and no one was asking for a jury trial? Was it an acknowledgement, or you're characterizing it as a waiver? And I'm just questioning that.
Yes, Justice Stacey, to answer that, first of all, it was a stipulation. It was an agreement amongst counsel. Everyone was present. All counsel was present. And it was an agreement on the record that was memorialized in the record by the court, by Judge Kozacek in his order, that all parties agreed that this matter was equitable. I think that language from the order is significant. Further, Justice Stacey, just to kind of hone in on that, if you look at the last page of the order, and this is transcript 67 and 68, Judge Kozacek states right in there, you have 10 days to object to that order, and no order, no objection was made within that period, or for 6 months, there was no question that that was applicable order and that anyone had any issue with it.
How much deference do we give to the trial court judge in such a matter? If the trial court judge interprets it as a waiver, how much deference does this court give to that determination?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's an important question. And it's an abuse of discretion standard. if you look at this court's, it's the case is called Braish. From this court, it's 292 Nebraska 930. This court states after there's been a valid waiver, there is no absolute right to withdraw, and whether to permit withdrawal is within the sound discretion of the trial court. And I think it's also noticeable that the appellants did not assign as error, nor did they argue in their brief why Justice Kozacek's decision to deny them this withdrawal of their jury trial waiver was an abuse of discretion. So I think that's waived on appeal. But I want to, if I may, return to Justice Stacey's question, because I think it's a really important one, which is, you know, did somehow the amendment of the pleadings somehow change the nature of this matter? Did it change, you know, what was going on? And if you look at what Judge Kozacek said, because he talks in his order, he does talk about this very issue. And he basically says that while there was subsequent amendment of the pleadings, his language is, quote, those subsequent filings did not change the basis of the relief sought. That's at transcript 192. And I think furthermore, Justice Stacey, if you look at the appellant's own brief, they concede the point. If you look at their March 30th, 2021 appellant's brief at page 14, the language they use is, quote, Simmons' legal cause of action did not involve a new subject. So there was no change of the nature of the proceeding or new facts or development of facts. It was always the same. And everybody knew what those facts were. So the district court's decision was well-reasoned, and it was perfectly consistent with Nebraska law. Returning back to this statutory language in Nebraska Revised Statute 25-11263, again, the waiver is by oral consent in open court entered upon the record. The oral consent was given at the hearing. In open court, under Black's Law Dictionary, there's a variety of different definitions in which open court would apply. For example, a proceeding in which formal entries are made on the record, which applies here, and or a court session that the public is free to attend, that would also apply. So we have an open court session entered upon the record. There's no dispute that there was an order right on point. So there was a clear, in our argument would be, there's a clear jury trial waiver there. And Mr. Schmid reasonably relied on that waiver. 6 months passed, and then Mr. Simmons filed an amended pleading and for the first time asserted a counterclaim demanding a jury. This was roughly a year and a half after the lawsuit was commenced. The district court properly denied the jury demand via thoughtful and lengthy order at transcript 189-192. The district court's denial was in all respects consistent with Nebraska laws, as previously indicated. In the Braish case, this court said the district court is within its discretion to deny a jury trial waiver, and that's subject to abuse of discretion standard. Mr. Simmons failed to show how the trial court abused his discretion in their appellate briefing. One reason cited in the October 3rd, 2018 order for denying the jury trial was that, repeating this notion that there was no change in terms of what the operative facts were. Furthermore, the district court properly noted, and even in their amended plea, even in Mr. Simmons' amended pleading and counterclaim, they continued to pray for relief that's just and equitable, again, invoking the district court's equitable jurisdiction over the entire pleading. Thus, Mr. Simmons validly waived the jury trial, and the subsequent amendment of the pleadings did not affect that waiver in any way, and the district court should be affirmed. The second issue, Your Honors, is even if for some reason the court found that there was not a valid waiver, which we argued that there was a valid waiver, the district court order should still be upheld because it properly denied Simmons' jury demand pursuant to black letter Nebraska case law and the Nebraska Constitution. In Simmons' appellate brief, he correctly states the law on point, which is that as enshrined in the Nebraska Constitution since 1875, the right to trial by jury remains inviolate. The constitutional provision preserves the right to a jury trial as it existed under the common law when the Nebraska Constitution was adopted in 1875. Excuse me. Critically, the equitable cleanup doctrine was in place when the Nebraska Constitution was adopted, which is clear from at least this court's Hodling versus Tecumseh decision, which is in the briefing. This is a bedrock black rule under Nebraska law. For example, in Kuhlman v. Cargill, 200 Nebraska 150, this court stated, the rule is that when a cause of action for equitable relief is stated, and when the plaintiff prays for equitable relief, a jury trial cannot be demanded as a matter of right by the defendant. Even if the defendant pleads legal defenses or a counterclaim for damages, he's not entitled to a jury trial, as when a court of equity acquires jurisdiction over a cause for any purpose, it may retain the cause for all purposes and proceed to final determination on all matters put in issue in the case. All of the plaintiff's claims were equitable, all six of them. At least four of Mr. Simmons' counterclaims were equitable, and even this breach of contract kind of hodgepodge claim that they claim was legal, is it's not even clear whether that's legal. There's aspects of equity involved in that claim. So the point there is the main object of the cause of action was equitable, and the district court properly tried all claims to the bench. Mr. Simmons argues in his brief that because equity and law courts have now merged, the equitable cleanup doctrine no longer makes sense. But that is an invalid argument, because the law and equity courts have been merged for many, many, many decades. And there's been no, that's not a new development in the law that would somehow vitiate this doctrine. For all of those reasons, Your Honors, or Justices, the district court was right in all material respects. And I just want to I'll defer our other arguments to our briefing. I just want to quickly touch on Mar 14's cross appeal. They raised two issues. One was a list pendens issue, which is now moot, which both all parties on the appeal agree with. And the final issue on appeal is this disassociation notion. Mar 14 argues that Schmid should have been disassociated. Simmons and Mar 14, neither of them pled disassociation. They didn't plead or prove the elements under the statute in Nebraska Revised Statute 21-145-5. It was their burden of proof to plead and prove that claim. They did not file a motion to make the pleadings conform to the evidence. And there's just no record that supports the requested relief. They use this language, hopelessly deadlocked, but that's not the standard. The standard is that they have the burden to show that Mr. Schmidt engaged in some conduct that would justify disassociation, which they failed to do in the district court, and they failed to do on appeal. And reference to cases in other states between the parties and those types of things, I think, underscores the weakness of the argument and demonstrates that the district court had a very common sense finding, which is they didn't plead it, they didn't prove it, and accordingly, the district court properly did not award them that relief. So, Your Honors, Justices, we respectfully request that this court affirm in all respects the district court's order. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? 4 seconds, Mr. McClay. We'll give you 30 seconds.
I would ask the court to look at the prayer in our briefs, and we would ask that you vacate the order, reverse, and send it back for a trial on the breach of contract claim. That's sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Counsel, Mr. Mattson, thank you for participating by WebEx, particularly in regard to the virus issues. We appreciate that, and both counsel on WebEx and here in the court are excused.
Thank you.